Good morning. So I want to go ahead and get this meeting started. We have a pretty well stacked agenda, so I think we should go ahead and start off. I will say that Bob Saban unfortunately is not able to join us today, so we will have to elect a pro tem chair. So if we could have nominations.
This Michael's Michael?
This one?
Which Michael?
Michael Howe.
Michael Howe.
I can do that.
Yeah, I can.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.
Okay, so we can have the roll call, please.
Okay. Brenda Arnold.
Here.
Sally Channon.
Here.
Michael Howe.
Here.
Jean Matthews.
Here.
Michael Owens.
Here.
Amanda Parker. Neil Wants.
Neil.
Olga Prieto. Mark Stivers.
Here.
Heather Trebeau.
Here.
And Mike Rigetti.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes for the October 17th, 2016 meeting?
So moved.
Sorry.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry, can you repeat back who was the first and who was the second?
Jean Matthews first, Michael
Owens
second.
Thank you.
And I went out of order, so I apologize. We have a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved. Second.
Excuse me, sorry, forgot to mention this earlier. If it's okay with the chair, could we possibly move action item, information item 3A after action item 2B? So 2B is the motion to recommend the approval of the transportation work program. So it kind of tells us every year what we've assigned our funds to, and then the annual obligations are what we're saying that we want to spend our funds on, and then the annual obligations report tells us what we actually have spent our funds towards. So those two might be good back to back.
Okay, those have been motions. First of all, for a discussion purpose, does anybody have issue with moving the agenda or changing the agenda? Could we have a revision to the motion?
So moved as noted.
Okay. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We've got a new agenda. So now, comments from the chair. I really don't have anything to say. So we'll go right into the bicycle pedestrian coordinator's report.
Okay, thanks. I have a few things to mention. One, I was really glad to attend the opening celebration of the Phase 2 Bluegill Trail. It's now open as of November 10th. I want to congratulate Sally Channon and her colleagues at IRM for their hard work on implementing the trail system. Also, I want to mention that many of the Palm Beach MPO staff were able to attend the Transpo conference. It was in downtown West Palm Beach, November 14th through 16th. The theme was From Bicycles to Connected Vehicles. I was really interested to learn specifically that the Florida DOT aims to do a automated vehicle test track in Auburndale, Florida. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see how automated vehicles and pedestrian and cyclists all live in tandem. Also, I want to announce that on December 9th, we'll have the South Florida Public Transit Day. It's a day that we're promoting that all people get out and use public transit. This is an initiative that's starting in South Florida. Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County are kind of joining forces in encouraging people to take transit on December 9th, and I believe that's a Friday. Also, I want to announce that the FHWA will have a road diet workshop. And this will take place February 3rd in Tequesta. I will send out an email with more information, but I just kind of want to put it on your radar. So the cost for public sector attendance is $50, private sector is $100. And again, I'll send you more information with the link. There's going to be a part two session of the training and a webinar on December 19th at 9:30. Also, the Safe Street Summit registration is now open for the 2017 Safe Street Summit. So the Safe Street Summit will be hosted by Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach MPOs, and it will be held Thursday and Friday, January 26th through 27th. The event will focus on building blocks to successful funding, implementing, and evaluating complete streets. It will be held again on the 26th and 27th in Sunrise Civic Center. And for more information, there's a website, safestreetsummit.org. And again, I'll email that information out to the committee as well, so you can get that as backup. I do also want to mention, as part of the Safe Streets Summit, there will be a Safe Streets Awards. So there's two kind of award designations. And feel free to nominate those that you think are eligible. The designations are Complete Streets Community Award and Complete Streets Champion Award. So the Community Award, of course, goes to a local government in Broward, Miami, or Palm Beach County that is advancing planning for complete streets. And the Champion Award goes to an individual. And thus concludes my comments for today.
Okay, thank you, Fran. Are there any of the members of the committee have any questions, comments? Okay, we'll move on to the next item, which is general public comments. Any members in the public here would like to make a comment? Nick, is invited to join in. Okay, thank you. On to the action items. Item A, motion to elect officers for the 2017 calendar year. So do we have any
nominations for chair?
Anyone willing to throw somebody under the fire?
Heather.
I was gonna nominate you.
I nominate Heather for chair. I do that.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We did. We've got a second. Are there any other nominations? Is there a motion to close the nomination?
So moved.
Heather, are you okay with it?
Do you accept? I do. Yes.
Okay, we could vote on those in favor of Heather being the chair.
Was there a second to Mark's?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I nominated.
You nominated. Okay, so Mark's second.
Yeah, that's it. Should I be repeating those? This is my amateur chair activity here. So all those in favor of Heather, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. We have a new chair. Thank you. Congratulations.
Yeah,
sure. Now, do we turn the gavel over to her?
No.
Nice try.
No.
So
it actually doesn't take effect until February. So
yeah.
This gavel actually belongs to you.
Well, that's
okay. There you go.
We need to fill the vice chair position.
I'm nominated to Matthew for vice chair.
I'm second that.
Turn about his fair play here. Any other nominations at this point? Motion to close nominations? And second is moved by Michael, seconded by Brenda. All those in favor of Jean, vice chair?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We got that taken care of. Let's go on to the next.
Congratulations.
So we have a motion to recommend approval of the Florida Department of Transportation work plan. And I see Nick is moving, so I'm going to get this time.
You would be right. Our executive director will speak a little bit more about the Florida Department of Transportation work plan.
Armed and dangerous now. I have a green laser, so anybody gets out of line.
Not the eye.
I'm shooting. Okay, so the DOT is obligated to come and present to the MPO. What they do to fulfill that obligation is they actually come and present to our technical committee and to our board annually what they have done with the money. And what I wanted to remind everyone is Fran was exactly correct when she asked to reorder the agenda. The work program says where we are going to spend money in the next 5 years, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. The obligations report shows you where we spent money in the previous year, in 16. We're in 17 right now, so we're actually living under the adopted TIP for fiscal year 17 that tells us how we're supposed to be spending money. So we wanted to show you where we're going and then allow you to see a little bit of a high-level summary of where we were last year and how our adopted TIF directed the use of actual dollars. So here we go. This process is part of the timeline to adopting the MPO's Transportation Improvement Program. That's a federal requirement that says every year we need to update where we're going to spend the money. Fiscal year 18 to 22 TIF, just as a reminder, back in the spring of this year, we asked everyone to submit projects to the MPO. We got a bunch of local initiatives applications, we got a bunch of transportation alternatives applications, we sifted through all those. The DOT at the same time was working through their priority list for what they need to do to make the state highway system as good as it can be. During the summer and fall, we finalized that list of major projects, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives. We presented that to the committees, and then ultimately to the MPO board. They adopted that prioritized list of projects. We sent that over to FDOT, and FDOT used our input in their analysis of their system to develop what they think is the best use of funds, which is now coming before you for review and comment or approval, depending on your preference as a committee, what you would like to recommend that the MPO board does. Now, I do want to clarify, state law says DOT has to present this. It doesn't say the MPO has to approve it. It's sort of implied in past practice that the MPO has always acted to approve or say, good job, DOT, you've done well with the funds. We like what you're doing. But we have the opportunity to say, okay, we aren't sure that you've done everything quite as well as we wish you would have, or quite the way we want you to, and submit comments. Those comments go to this entity called the Florida Transportation Commission. So that's an appointed body by the governor of overseers of the Florida Department of Transportation. So these are citizens that are supposed to be looking out for us that the district secretaries and the statewide DOT secretary are being held accountable by. And anything we raise as an issue becomes a discussion item at their annual meeting, and then they say, is there room for change, or can you work on this next year, because we don't want you to have to talk about objections. We want you to just do things that the communities like. So that's kind of how the process works. And then ultimately, that document goes out to the DOT central office folks, to the statewide secretary, to the governor, and then finally to the legislature for approval, especially in the first year. Fiscal year 18 gets approval by the legislature as a budgeted commitment or appropriation of funds. Then it comes back following that budgetary session to the MPO, and it comes back as the draft TIP for the fiscal year 18 through 22 time period, and then a final adoption by the MPO governing board in June. I'll be candid, if we want to change something, it needed to happen really here. Because once we get to the draft tentative work program, the honest answer is they've played Sudoku, they've matched up funding needs with funding availability on project by project basis for hundreds of projects and eligibility issues. It's almost too late to change. But we can correct our course going forward if we see things that are getting out of alignment. We can say, well, let's not do it that way next year. Let's kind of make sure and if there's something really radically offensive, we could probably push on a significant change like that. If it was like, whoa, that doesn't make any sense. But once we get down to the legislature's already adopted the work program, and we come in and say, let's change something at the TIF. We actually tried that a couple years ago, and we got a nasty letter from DOT saying, if you change the TIF from what was in the work program, we're not going to approve it, and you won't get any money for any of your projects. It's an interesting kind of a stalemate conversation that we had, where ultimately the MPO said, okay, fine, we'll adopt the TIF because we want to preserve our current year funding, but we want to do business differently going forward. Let's work together so we don't have that kind of mutually assured destruction conversation. I'm telling you way more than you wanted to hear, but fun backgrounds to this whole funding dance that we do. All right, suggested approach to review. What are we looking for when we look at the work program? First, is the funding in the draft work program consistent with the adopted long-range transportation plan and the MPO's funding resolution? I'll get more into that on the next slide. Second, has it advanced the proactive projects that we've identified as most important to Palm Beach County, the MPO's list of priority projects? Third, look at the fiscal year 18 construction projects. This is sort of your last opportunity to react to the projects that are going to be built in fiscal year 18. And then lastly, what other major additions, modifications, or deletions are present in this draft program, and are those acceptable to you? Do you understand what they're doing with the money, why they're doing it, and how that's playing out. So, long-range transportation plan consistency in the MPO funding resolution. First, we ask the DOT to ensure that they're implementing strategic intermodal system projects consistent with our long-range plan and that they're funding those projects with CIS revenues. I put a red X there, and I'm going to go into that on the last slide with respect to the modifications and additions, because they're adding some projects beyond what was in our long-range transportation plan. So they're saying, hey, if we think it's a good idea to advance a few projects that were not in your cost-feasible plan, we want to build them in the next 5 years anyway. So I want to make you aware of that. Are you funding MPO major projects with our federal surface transportation funds and state revenues, the district dedicated revenue, which is gas tax collected by the state in Palm Beach County that's supposed to be spent in Palm Beach County on projects that matter to us? DS is state gas tax to be spent statewide, and public transportation funds. That's the PTO, Public Transportation Office. And then, are you advancing our local initiatives projects with our federal dollars and other supporting funds? And lastly, are you funding our transportation alternatives projects with federal transportation alternatives? And are you implementing other projects that are important to the department with the discretionary resources available to the DOT that doesn't create an adverse impact on any of our MPO priorities? We know that everyone has their own agendas, their own ideas, and if you want to do your stuff with your things with your stuff, that's fine, but if you do your things with our stuff, then we start to feel infringed upon. And so we have a question mark there, and I'm going to just highlight the US 27 corridor as an example project that I think we need to talk a little bit more about with the department. Again, that'll come up on a later slide. So, going through our project lists, we have a target level for funding of $200 million for the MPO's major priority projects. In the 17-21 adopted TIP, we were actually slightly above that. In the 18-22 project program, we're a little bit below that. That is primarily because these four projects, the two State Road 7 extension pieces from Okeechobee to 60th, 60th and North Lake, the State Road 7 complete street in West Boca, and the Glades Road intersection improvements on that full corridor at Boca Raton, are all funded for construction in fiscal year 17. So they rolled off the program, and we've got a relatively low level of funding in the five-year work program in years 3, 4, and 5 for our major projects. Part of that is we are developing the needed design plans for Atlantic Avenue, and we're going to be working on the US 1 multimodal corridor study. So once we know what we're going to build in those two corridors, we'll start to see more significant dollars invested in the later years to actually construct those identified improvements. The other part is we've got this corridor project, this transit corridor project, where we want to take Tri-Rail north from West Palm Beach up to the 45th Street, PGA Boulevard, and Tony Penna Drive. That frankly is stagnating. And I need to work a little more closely with the DOT and with the Tri-Rail folks to figure out how we can make this project move forward in a timely fashion and get our funding total back up to that $200 million. Because we need about, I don't know, 70, 75 million-ish to get Tri-Rail up to Jupiter. It would be great to start to see design funds for stations and for third track where it's necessary, and construction funds start to move forward. But there are some moving pieces there. It's complicated, but it's something that we would love to see happen. Two things I want you to be aware of. We did ask for construction funding of Atlantic Avenue from State Road 7 to Alliance. That is going to be a four-lane project. Currently, it's a two-lane corridor, and it's a great opportunity because of the right-of-way that's going to be acquired to make sure that there is a not just minimally adequate non-motorized infrastructure, but great facilities for bicycles and pedestrians. That's part of that State Road 7 over to Atlantic and then up Lyons Road corridor and the regional greenways plan, and we'd love to see that be a premium location for bicycle and pedestrian activities.
And a question for you. The Tri-Rail extension, is that in any way looking at the Coastal Link option?
It's a component of the Coastal Link project. So the idea, I don't have a map in front of us if we're going to talk details, but the idea is that Tri-Rail goes north into West Palm Beach and then north and west. It kind of goes north and west up to Mangonia Park on the CSX rail corridor.
Right.
One of the projects we'll get into on the later slide, I just mentioned briefly, is the Northward Connection. So there's two rail corridors in Palm Beach County, CSX to the west, FEC to the east. Mm-hmm. We need to build a connector between them.
Correct.
So that you get north of West Palm, you can cut over to the FEC corridor. That's one of the key components of the project. Two other reasons it's stagnating, frankly. One is that to get north to Jupiter, the cost estimate of $75 million relies upon all of Board Florida constructing a bright line, constructing their phase two project, and the additional capacity in the corridor that that project needs that we would like to benefit from. Mm-hmm. If we go before them, we pay those costs. If they go first, they pay those costs. So it's a kind of who goes first. And then the second big obstacle is we don't own the corridor. So if we can knock on their door and say, wouldn't it be great if you granted us an easement to run service on your corridor, but we need them to say yes, that would be great, and here's what it would cost, and we'll work that out. And then the third obstacle is local funding for maintenance and operation of the system. So frankly, the extension is valuable, but it's the fares that it will generate will not cover the cost to operate that system. So we need to come up with an outside revenue source. So once those three stars align, I think we'll see that project move forward. But until they do, it's kind of sitting there. Thanks. Other thing I wanted to mention was Balboa Road is a Lakewood Park of Commerce funding infrastructure project that I think will attract a lot of businesses to the Lake Worth area. That board direction was to fund that project at $3 million. That's been done. And then lastly, the Tri-Rail is seeking to install construct a second station in Boca Raton. The current station is at Yamato, just west of 95, at the southeast corner of Yamato and Congress. Second station is going to be in the Glades Road area. The construction funding for that was deferred from fiscal year 18 to 19 in the hopes of better aligning with the developer schedule in that area. So that's our major project summary, our local initiative. This is a really big success story, and I've got so many projects that they're all in your backup material that we highlight the details of. I just wanted to give you a high-level overview. We were aiming for $85 million last year, and $85 is roughly $17 million of SU dollars, surface transportation dollars, available to the MPO times 5 years that we can program that money. So we were aiming for 85 last year, we were at 75, this year we're at 146 million. So we've identified a lot of projects that are going to be implemented over the next 5 years. And in fact, all of the projects in our local initiatives program, except for Lake Worth Road improvements in the vicinity of I-95, because we haven't clarified exactly what will be built there yet, all of the other projects are fully funded through the fourth year of this draft work program. And we have money left over in the fifth year to fund applications that we'll be looking for in the current cycle. So I think we're talking next about the local initiatives and transportation alternatives rules for the upcoming applications. Frankly, this local initiatives program, I think, has been a wonderful success. Our communities have taken hold of this, recognized this as a funding opportunity. And I've had people say to me, wouldn't it be good if the MPO established a more dedicated complete streets funding program? I'll be honest with you, this has become sort of a de facto complete streets funding program. We have other eligible uses that people can apply for, but local governments in Palm Beach County are not really pursuing those other outcomes. They're not saying, hey, let's ask for freight efficiency projects out of the local initiatives program. They're saying, we want to build complete streets in our community so that we can walk, bike, take transit, move around safely and efficiently without just focusing on the automobile. And it's a wonderful program. I think we've got a lot of big projects coming up. I've just highlighted the first 3 years construction of projects within the program, and especially wanted to focus on the Palmetto Park pathway. That was advanced from outer year to fiscal year 18. That's going to be constructed on the south side of Palmetto Park Road, all the way from State Road 7 into Boca Raton. West Palm Beach funding for new trolleys, so to introduce an additional two trolley lines. So right now they're operating three different trolley services that connect through their downtown. This would be two new trolley services, one to the north and one to the south. Palmtran bus shelters, all were advanced into fiscal year 18. In 19, we've got the Indian Town Road adaptive traffic signals and high visibility crosswalks, pattern pavement crosswalks that will also have latitudinal, longitudinal striping on them. So there'll be the high visibility crosswalks that really emphasize the pedestrians that are seeking to cross that corridor north and south. Congress Avenue street lighting, again, a pedestrian safety investment. Boca Raton funding for trolleys, two new trolley services in Boca Raton, and then West Palm Beach trolley shelters. And then in fiscal year 20, we've got US 1 street lighting, again, pedestrian safety investment, four Palm Beach County bridges, the Loson Boulevard complete street project in Delray Beach, Swinton Avenue complete street project in Delray Beach, two traffic efficiency investments for the county of fiber optic cable extension on 4 major corridors, and then video detection at 25 different intersections to ensure that we can only keep the lights green for cars as long as there are cars there, and not worry about the those inductive loop pavement detection devices that tend to get cut and they don't perform very reliably. Hamlin Boulevard sidewalk that will connect to a regional park out in the Indian Trail Improvement District area, and then Clintmore Road pathway, all advanced into fiscal year 20. So we have a lot of great projects coming up. And I think that the plea, as you're thinking about this, the plea to you is keep filling the pipeline. Go back to your local governments, come up with, or even look at some of the information we're going to present to you this morning, the bicycle suitability map. Use that as a guidance to where you can invest in more and improve better infrastructure so that we can continue to load the pipeline in this program with great projects. Transportation alternatives. We're looking at a minimum of $11 million because that's our funding allocation of federal dollars. And this program requires a local match to be present in the project, so we want to see at least that much. In 17 to 21, we've got $16 million, and then in 18 to 22, we're actually bumping it up to $22 million, primarily because of the attraction of local and even sometimes state dollars to supplement those federal funds, which is the example of the US 1 corridor into Cluster. We're piggybacking transportation alternatives funds onto a resurfacing job to go from a six-lane project without bike lanes to a four-lane project with bike lanes and wider sidewalks. And that actually is the focus, the reason we have that federal highway road diet workshop, which I think the field review is in February.
February
3rd. The reason we were able to secure that workshop in Palm Beach County is because we're doing projects like this, and they want to show, they want to showcase, Federal Highway wants to showcase this kind of a modification as the type of work that our planning community should be doing to make our facilities more attractive for the vulnerable users, our bicyclists, our pedestrians, and our transit users who need to move about within the corridor. So we've got a total of 14 projects funded through the Transportation Alternatives Program over the next 3 years. All of them seem to be moving forward on schedule and looking good for construction. A couple of highlights on the fiscal year 18 construction project. So again, you've got that proactive, now this is the reactive, and then we're gonna look at that overview of modification. So construction projects coming up, resurfacing projects by the department, State Road 80 in the more agricultural part of Palm Beach County, west of 20 Mile Bend, and then I-95 in the Boynton Beach area. I-95 at Atlantic Avenue, the interchange project that's going to take that westbound to southbound loop ramp and make it into what they call a turbo lane, which means it'll run almost all the time and you won't have to worry about all those crazy other cars that might get in their way. So people coming out of Delray Beach will be able to go south on the 95 a little bit faster. Definitely something that the city, just as a side note, because this committee, I think, is very, very keyed in on this, the city has been very integrally involved in the design of that project to ensure that the vehicles that are going westbound to southbound on that loop will be required to stop and provide safe crossing for pedestrians and bicyclists moving through the interchange. It's a challenge. These interchange projects are tough because the department has an objective of getting cars on and off efficiently with minimal delay onto the interstate system. We at the MPO have an objective of improving bicycle and pedestrian safety at these critical choke points throughout the I-95 corridor, the turnpike, and even railroads and bridges. And we have to all get together and look hard at these types of projects and figure out how can we make both of those objectives happen together. So I think they're doing a decent job. There's always going to be people who say, well, I wish we would do better, but that's what, so that project is coming up in 18. That Northward Rail connection that I mentioned, that is happening in fiscal year 18. From the South Florida Rail Corridor to the west and the FEC, a South Central Florida Express Rail extension out in the Glades area to improve rail delivery of goods from our agricultural area in the west is funded through the department's work program. Port of Palm Beach improvements to maximize the efficiency of moving their cargo. And then if you drive Southern Boulevard, you'll notice that there are no right turn lanes if you're going westbound to get onto the turnpike at either the East Turnpike intersection or Pike Road. The DOT is going to be installing exclusive westbound right turn lanes at both of those intersections this coming year. And then as part of the statewide emphasis on bicycle, really on pedestrian safety, and Alex might be able to talk more specifically about this, the DOT has set aside, I want to say it's $100 million over the next 5 years to install pedestrian scale lighting at major intersections where they've observed a higher than average incident rate for pedestrian collisions at night. So two of the corridors in Palm Beach County that are benefiting from that are the Military Trail Corridor and Blue Heron Boulevard in the Riviera Beach area. So lastly, significant changes. On the additions side, this is the one that I wanted to mention to the committee. The Florida DOT has identified the US 27 corridor as an appropriate corridor to make a major investment, I consider major, $53 million over the next 4 years to design and construct wider stabilized paved shoulders. So this is the corridor up here. There's no paved shoulder on the inside, and there's a minimal width paved shoulder on the outside. They want to take both sides of the road to 10 feet, so it's going to be a nice wide paved surface out here. And they've come in and said, we think it's a good use of state tax, gas taxes, the district dedicated revenue that's collected here should be spent here. They want to spend that on the improved safety of US 27. If you're unfamiliar with where US 27 is, you've never heard of it before, it's because it's all the way out in the southwest part of Palm Beach County, connects west of the Everglades Restoration Area, connects us to Broward and Miami-Dade County, comes up from the south into South Bay, and then goes west into Henry County on the southwest side of the lake.
What is the thinking behind widening the shoulder?
So I'm not exactly sure. This is actually the first time I've given this presentation, and I haven't had a chance to get deep into the question with the DOT. The short answer is it gives vehicles who break down on the corridor a place to recover, either on the west or the east side of the road. I'm not certain. I raise this because I'm not certain that it's a great use of funds, and I think we need to have this question of, hey, if we have $53 million of state money that could be spent anywhere in Palm Beach County, is this safety improvement really the number one priority? So that's why I put it on here. I think it's an important question to wrestle with.
So we don't have anybody sitting here.
Well, Alex is here, but
Alex,
I don't know how familiar
sorry,
you are with that corridor, Alex. That's a tough one for you.
That's the first time I heard of the shoulder widening on 27.
Okay.
I'll follow up with it and see. Yeah, I don't think it's a good use. I drive that road every weekend.
Well, it's, you know, the interesting thing about it is normally you say to people, if you want to come in with a new project, you need to come in the new fifth year, because we've got commitments in years 1 through 5 of the current program. So this project is actually coming in year 1 and 2 for design and year 3 and 4 for construction. So it's kind of like, it raises some questions. It's one of those that we would say, hey, are you sure this is, you know, the money becomes available, are you sure this is where it should go? So it's just something we need to have, and I think I wanted the committees to be aware of it. The North County Airport runway, the 1331 runway, is being expanded, and that's a significant new project. The several I-95, what I think the department would call smaller intersection improvements at I-95 interchanges at Indiantown, Belvedere, and Okeechobee are also new funded for construction in the new fifth year projects. And then there's 4 new resurfacing projects. Portion of I-95, US 1 north of Linton Boulevard, just a small section that was sort of omitted when Delray did their project and the DOT did a resurfacing project, there was a gap. And so this project comes in and fills that gap. State Road 15 near Pahokee, and then Boynton Beach west of the Turnpike. And then the modifications, this is again what I wanted to highlight when I said, are they funding the CIS projects not in a manner that's consistent with our long-range plan? So first, there's a huge increase, not just in the new fifth year, but again, in interim years, increase in funding for I-95 interchange projects. And while that's strategic intermodal system revenue allocated from the central office folks at DOT, the question for the MPO board and for the committees advising the board is, are we excited about, do we want to clamor to endorse this kind of investment of an additional $170 million to improve interchanges along I-95? And by improve, what we mean is add lanes so the cars can get on and off a little more quickly with less delay. With the caveat that those interchange projects, again, department's kind of they're being held to 2 standards. One is let's make the cars move efficiently, the other one is let's make the interchanges safer for pedestrians and bicyclists. And they're trying to merge those 2 things. So, you know, you're not going to get standalone funding, not likely to receive standalone funding to improve bicycle and pedestrian safety at the interchanges. What you can do is use the department's funding for capacity improvements and ensure that it is being spent in a way that does improve bicycle and pedestrian safety while they're doing their projects. So if you said, we don't want you to do any of this stuff, then you might end up cutting off your nose to spite your face, so to speak. But it's a conversation topic I think we should be aware of, because that's where the significant dollars are going in the work program. And then so I've highlighted the three that are consistent with our long-range plan: Gateway Boulevard, and then the construction at Gateway, and then right-of-way acquisition at both the Boynton Beach Interchange and Central Boulevard, which is a new interchange. And then the construction funding for the Glades Road intersection and the North Lake Boulevard interchange, both of those are being advanced in the work program, but they're not in our long-range transportation plan. Now, frankly, when we presented the Glades Road interchange improvements, the city of Boca salivated and said, build them faster. And the department and the MPO board said, build them faster. And I think there is that good combination of can we move the cars efficiently and can we provide for improved pedestrian and bicycle safety at the Glades Road intersection. The department heard that, and they actually not only funded construction, but they funded construction with the I-95 Express Phase 3B. So they're going to build the Glades Road interchange together with the I-95 Express lanes from Glades Road up to Linton Boulevard. That was really consistent with the MPO board in action, so I fully expect the MPO to say, amend the long-range plan, show that they can build that one, let's make it happen. North Lake Boulevard is a little bit trickier. For those of you who are familiar with North County, that project is in the PD&E stage right now. They're looking at three alternatives. One of them is a standard interchange, just make the add more turn lanes when you get off. The second alternative is if you're going east or west on North Lake Boulevard, you will drive up a ramp in the median, go up over 95, and then come down on the far side as like a third level flyover option to get more quickly onto the interstate and take those turn movements out of the intersections. And then the third option is what's called a diverging diamond interchange, where the traffic approaching the intersection switches over to the left side of the road to make the turns a little more efficient, less complex. It sounds awkward. Where it's been built, it functions reasonably well. But I bring that up because there's some question in the north part of Palm Beach County about whether that project is a good idea or not. And DOT is advancing the funding of it at the same time as the MPO is being asked whether or not to endorse one of those three alternatives. So that's the big summary. I think that's the last slide. Yep. I apologize for taking up so much time, but I did want to give you that high-level overview of what's happening in the next 5 years.
Okay, do any committee members have any questions, comments?
Is the North Lake, is that one that came, I mean, the Glades one came to the committee, and I know we had comments on it about as far as the pedestrian and bike access, and North Lake at 95 is another important one in that you can already, it's well set up for crossing the turnpike with bicycle and pedestrian access on North Lake going west, but I-95 is a real lock point for any sort of bicycle pedestrian traffic going east. So does this proposal, any of those three options you're talking about, advance the bike pedestrian safety the way that Glades interchange it?
I guess my response to that is we're going to have them come and present thoroughly to you and to the MPO board what the alternatives are and what they are recommending as the preferred outcome for that interchange. And that's when I would rather have that discussion.
Okay.
I don't have the plans in front of me, and I think you need to really see the details.
I didn't remember it coming here, and I know they did with the Glades, and we had a good opportunity to comment.
Yeah, that one hasn't come yet, but it will. And I should mention, the design funding, I want to say, is in fiscal year 18 for North Lake, and then right-of-way is in 2021, and then construction is in 22. So it's not an imminent project, but with design moving all the way into 18, it's, you know, the opportunity to make changes is going to come and go.
There's
actually a 995 interchange meeting for North Lake Boulevard. Is it December 1st?
I think it's the 8th.
No, the Southern Boulevard was yesterday.
I think it's tonight.
Southern Boulevard is tonight, and North Lake is next week. That's it. It's hard to keep up with all this stuff.
I have one
comment for the record. The city of West Palm Beach is going to vote against this item.
Only because of items number one, priority items number one and two, State Road 7, which the city is currently in a lawsuit against. We do not support the project. It is going through our watershed, and the land use, the both future and existing land use, is conservation. So we do not support State Road 7, and therefore we'll vote against this.
Okay. So do we have, are you finished?
I'm done, Nick.
Okay. Do we have a motion to recommend approval of the FDOT work program? Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
I'm going to say aye too.
We got two.
Just because we seem to still have some questions that haven't been moved forward. To clearly understand it.
Okay. Nick, will you be handling the next item? We had,
I'm actually going to let Luke do that.
The info item A, Luke. We can move right into the, we revise the agenda with information item A following this item.
Okay. Marge, if you can pull up the backup for that, just the summary.
Summary,
then I think that'll help guide the discussion.
So Nick talked about the Drought Tenant Work Program, which is forward-looking. So the Federal Obligations Report is something that DOT issues in like October, and they really just give us this printout, and it just shows basically where and how they spent these federal dollars. So just the summary page. Yeah. All right. So we created this kind of two-page report. It's very different from the output that DOT gives us. So the what you're supposed to do is take a look at the obligations that DOT has done and then compare them to the TIF where you actually make the ask. Say, oh, this is what we said we were going to spend. Now this is what we actually did. So we have in order of magnitude from negative, from largest negative to largest positive, we have the SFRTA labor maintenance facility. It did not show up in the TIF as a 16 request, but it did show up as obligations. And so we, we did some detective work and kind of found out that the program, that the project was accelerated from 17 to 16. So going down the list, you should have a note with everything pretty much. There's a couple of weird instances. So down on this line, so we got Beeline Highway. So we see a negative number in obligations. That's DOT de-obligating $1.0 million. So they kind of just either removed that federal component from the project in that magnitude, or they just used state funds. So yeah, so we just said federal funds removed from the project. So these are big ones. So we are asked for, in the 16 TIP was $73 million. FDOT obligated $60 million, and there's $13 million, I guess, still in their pot somewhere. And then the next page, if you guys are interested, is a very detailed summary of all the obligations. And then we just compare them to the TIP. And you can kind of see the work mix, phase, and the funding code they were intended to use. So are there any questions on this?
Luke, can I ask where there are funds remaining, where will those funds come from?
So like for this one, so the 16, the request was for $0, and there was $13 million spent, like obligated. They really just advanced that from 17 forward, so the money came from, forward. I guess they have a big pocket of change, I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, do we have any comments from any of the members of the committee? Are you complete?
All set, yeah.
Do we have a motion?
That was an information item.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's right, it is.
Yeah.
We don't need a motion. Thank you.
Duly informed.
Okay, so
yes.
We move on to item 2C, motion to recommend approval of local initiative program guidelines and scoring systems.
Mm-hmm. And that will be Luke Lambert again, and he'll talk about the local initiatives program, and I'll follow up in talking about the transportation alternatives.
Okay.
All right, so you saw the funding amounts that were in the Drought Tenant Work Program for local initiatives. we're getting a good head full of steam going forward. Just a little background. The LRTP, Directions 2040, carved out future allocations of the SU funds that Nick was talking about. We're looking at $17 million a year. And you know, we intend for these projects to be low-cost, non-regionally significant projects. So transit capital for your trolleys, bike ped components, also create efficiency, and a TSMNO. So kind of like the traffic lights, the fiber optic stuff that we talked about. So status quo from last year, we have a minimum request of $250,000 and a maximum funding amount of $2.5 million. In the prior year, the maximum was $4 million. We kind of took a look and said, maybe we'll get some more applications if we reduce the amount and you know have more people go after the funds. Really, this is one of the topics where you know if the committees wish to build more larger projects, you know, you guys can make the recommendation that the funding amount be moved up. And where this comes into play is, so the county applied for the bridge project, you know, after DOT designs and finally comes up with their long-range estimates, the prices of those projects kind of go up. So I've done the average. The average project is about $3 million in cost. So the $2.5 million is the current status quo. I'm expecting some people from the TAC to say, hey, let's bump it up a little bit, and then it's more enticing for me to go after the money. So applicants may submit a maximum of 3 applications, and then only the highest ranking projects will be included in the draft priority list. And then funding permits will do rounds where your next project will get added in. So applications should be submitted online via our website. We're going to still use our same online form. Then we have Exhibit B, which is our schedule. We'll go over that in a little detail in a second. And then required documents. So a couple of you guys applied last year. There's kind of a lot of documentation that DOT is requiring from us, you know, resolutions of support, stuff like that. So those are all listed out in Exhibit C. So Exhibit D is our scoring system. That was derived during the long-range transportation plan. We've had a couple of modifications over the year or two, but those are in Exhibit D. And then we have a glossary. And then, as always, the MPO board has the right to move around our priority lists. So whatever you guys come up with, they could move projects around as they see fit. So if we could just go to, so this is a snapshot of the application form on the website. So application number, stuff like that, and then you'll just upload your documents. So for the exhibit, Fran, do you want to just cover this under time or should I do it now?
Sure, I can.
Okay. So we'll skip over that and Fran will go into that in detail. And then really the required documents are mostly the same from last year. We just wanted to highlight that, you know, you have a project implementation plan. So the applicant can design and with local funds and construct with reimbursement via a LAP agreement. So that's traditionally how the TAP program operates. So there's also a couple of different options here. You could design it and construct it with MPO funds. You're going to score a little less in our scoring metric. FDOT can design, and then you could fund, and then be funded with construction with MPO funds. You would enter into an LFA, and then FDOT will design and construct fully with MPO funds, but that's going to score the least amount in our bonus scoring, in our bonus points. I think that's it on this. You know, we just asked for resolutions, photos. Go ahead, Brenda.
So two questions, Brenda. One is, will this board, I mean, unfortunately, if you're doing complete streets, which we're hoping that we have a project that we'll put in this year on an old section of road, the 2.5 isn't really that much money considering how the distance we're going and the age of the infrastructure, et cetera.
You think about Indian Town Road?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I guess my question is, will this group make that recommendation if they agree that it should be bumped up from 2.5 million to a different number?
You guys could recommend that? I think the TAC is going to recommend that, so it's pretty likely that it'll go up.
Okay, so that's my first one. In the second one, under existing ownership documentation of all right-of-way,
required for the project, including easements. So we kind of get like mixed messages about they don't necessarily want a project that doesn't have all the right-of-way already secured, and then we get the mixed messages, oh, you can't do it in advance of the project. So can somebody answer that question?
Well, if you own the right-of-way, we want to know that you have, we want to see that documentation. If you are not the owner of your right-of-way, then we would like to have the letter of approval from the authorized facility owner. I don't know, is that answering?
Okay, you? So there's two things. It's a county road now that we're going to take over. Maybe this is two. But there is some additional right-of-way or easements we may need to, from the private property owners to get it going. So that's more of what I was talking about.
Okay. Yes, so you would need the combination of the county portion and then the private entity as well, saying that they agree to this project as it's suggested.
Okay.
And I'm not sure about the private property thing, though, because Christine's always adamant, no right-of-way acquisition, and easements are considered a right-of-way acquisition. So that one's a tricky one. You might have to be confined to the county's right-of-way. But let's talk about that project. I think we already have a meeting. So.
We do.
Well, the question I had too is the 250 minimum. One of the projects I'm thinking about is 250
minimum.
One of the projects I'm thinking about is on Jupiter Farms Road, south of Indian Town. Engineering has done Erm has a pathway on their berm, and then it goes into engineering pathway on the east side of Jupiter Farms Road. It ends just shy of Jupiter Farms, and we need a crosswalk and about 1,000 feet of pavement to do connectivity. That may not cost $250, but that would be an ideal project.
Okay. It may be more suitable for TAP, and then maybe if you have any other kind of features that you could add into the project.
I'm definitely trying to enhance it as much as you could in the back.
You can include survey engineering, all soft costs, right?
For TAP, that's kind of your local match.
I don't know.
This construction, 250, yeah.
1,000 feet of pavement is not that much.
Yeah. Hopefully that can get funded through your Pathways program.
Well, we just constructed a pathway on the east side of Jupiter Farms, and we put in a head crossing at the park.
Oh, but isn't there a gap? There's no gap? Okay, so
I think it's on built from Indian Town Road south to Sandy Road.
I thought we went to Randolph Siding, and so there was a little bit of a gap.
No, it was just built like a month ago.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay.
You're fast. Freaky fast.
All right, and then let's just go down the score criteria. I think you guys are all kind of familiar with. We have the LRTP values kind of coincide with the different metrics that are throughout. So, you know, this is basically use this to help answer, to fill out your online questionnaire, the online application. So,
No major changes from the scoring sheet,
guys. No major changes. Glossary, and I think that's it.
Will we have an opportunity, this group, to review the applications?
So local initiatives, no. So local initiatives is, we try and keep that as hardcore math as we can. It's basically, it gets put into our online system, it gets exported, and it's all kind of by the scoring criteria. There's no subjectivity to the scoring for this. So once you guys see the project priorities list, you guys will have the opportunity to try and re-rank them. But really, I think the main focus is TAP for this group.
TAP, you'll be able to receive the presentations.
Okay, are there any more questions for Luke at this time? Do we want to continue the discussion about the minimum and maximum funding numbers?
I would like to make a resolution to raise the maximum to $3 million. Because we don't want large good projects not to move forward because of that. Is $3 million enough?
That's my question.
I can only speak to the projects we've done because they're like the A1A project, we had to split up into phases because we couldn't do the whole thing. Because like
you all know, when you go to complete streets, there's a lot of things on a 60-year-old road that you have to do that didn't necessarily want to do, but it makes sense to do it. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're anticipating our project to be probably $5 million. So I don't know what everybody else's projects might look like, but it's about, I'm going to say it's about a half mile, I guess, off the top of my head. So I don't know the length of other people's projects. So I don't know if maybe we could come up with some per mile cost on complete streets that might help us to make that decision. But if it's something that needs to be done today, I guess if you've looked at things, $3 million was your recommendation. I mean, it seems like that would be consistent.
I mean, that was kind of the average. I mean, if I had to make a recommendation, 3.5 sounds good, but
yeah.
it's totally up to you guys. I mean, yeah, we started at 5 and then we kind of dropped it down, and then, yeah.
Just from our two projects that we had, we spent $6 million on the A1A project, and we spent, and this one, before we're even into hardcore design, we're right at $5 million, so. Yeah. I'm going to sound very self-centered, but I'll raise it to 3.5.
Any other input?
Well, what was the thought behind lowering it?
I think to try and spread the money out more. So early on, the program was dominated by larger like county projects, and we wanted to try and get everyone on board. And basically, when we did our strategic plan, we kind of said we would love to have 2 times the ask of what's available. So if we say $17 million is available, we kind of were looking for $30 million in asks. So we thought lowering it might get more people to try and get those smaller projects in. But last year, you know, I think we had like 6 applications. So we want to you know, fulfill your needs to completing a project, but we also want to spread the money around. So
it seems like if there's a thought behind that is if you lower it doesn't necessarily make more people want to submit. It just makes it so that more people are submitting lower cost projects. So it doesn't seem like that is the answer to your goal.
Right. And what
okay.
we found in the past, and most old timers here, is that particularly the smaller cities, they can't take on any size projects without some fairly significant help from the NPO and the state and the federal government. So what we found is that if they wanted projects done, they really need more help, not less. And so I think the desire to distribute it across for complete streets, I don't think that's going to personally, I don't think it's going to work because I think those are too big a nut for those. So personally, just thinking of it, I'd rather have a good section of complete street done than these little tiny pieces that don't make sense and nobody's going to approve because they're too small. Because we even have that now. You're going from US 1 to Indiantown, which is great, but what happens when you get to Indiantown and you want to go south? So, you know, there's always that discussion. It's like, when do you, you know, where is that cutoff point? So I think it would be hard for them to do smaller projects to see the construction costs are high.
Mark, can you help me out 1 second? I want to just pull up the draft and work program. We made these summary comparisons, and it's basically what your project priority list I saw you had up earlier. And it would just give you an idea of the projects that have come through and their amounts.
Okay.
So it'll just give you
know, since it might be a fairly, probably the most recent estimate, do we know what the Tequesta complete street costs are coming in at?
You're talking for the US 1 project?
For the US 1 project.
Yeah, well, we can look at that one.
Okay, good.
That one's in here.
Does it break it into miles or?
So it doesn't break it into miles.
Okay.
So I think it's down 1 more page. So like the Indiantown Road project, that was $5 million. That one's expensive. But like here's another one. It's a $1 million project. So Australian Avenue, this is a lighting project. There's $3 million. There's probably some other component on there. I'm not exactly sure at this moment. But so the bridge projects, those actually went down. So that was a good one.
But that's a lighting program.
They're just different projects. Like this is bike lanes, lighting. There's ITS components.
And I was just going to say, it'd be very hard to determine a number for complete streets because there's so many varying
variables.
No, you could have drainage.
Sure.
It could be lights. It could be a sidewalk that's making it complete. It could be transit. So there's a lot of variables that could, you know, it could just be
sure.
You need a sidewalk on that side, you know.
Now, one of the things, if we raised it to $3.5 or $4 million, could we then say you have an $8 million project? You could apply for phase one and phase two and build it all at the same time, right?
I don't think at the same time. We would want you to phase your projects, you know, to try and maximize the money and the the contractor schedules, but you can't do two phases. I think it would just be the entire thing, but.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. You get funded two different years, but the day you break ground, you do the whole project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've done that in the past.
That might be a programming question, you know, for
yeah,
them to do.
They've allowed that in the past.
Okay.
But.
So this just kind of gives you an idea of the project cost for projects that we've had, so.
For some of the questions that are coming up, it's good to point out that we'll have a workshop on December 15th at 9 a.m. for the Taffin L line. We'll have FDOT representatives there, so we can ask some of those on programming.
December 15th?
And I
yes.
think there's a flyer in the table at the entrance for that?
Yes. What was it last year? I mean, was it 4 million?
No, it was 2.5.
It was 2.5
yeah.
last year?
Yeah.
Okay.
And can you go down one more page? So. Like, these are the projects that were funded, that were applied for last year. So Congress Avenue, there's some extra money in there. And the thing is, this is kind of the sum of the funds, so there's actually, you know, breakdowns. There's, like, some local funds on these projects and stuff like that, so they're not all MPO funds. So the US 1 Dixie project is $5 million, but it's not all SU funds. There's some local funds in there as well. And if you look at the drafted work plan, you'll see the details, so. But see, these were a lot of lower cost projects down here. So.
Okay, do we want to continue discussion about raising the cap?
I just have one question. How many more applications did you get than you were able to fund? Was it like 20% more or?
Last year we were undersubscribed.
Oh, then I say raise it to $3.5 million.
Okay, do I have a motion? We're gonna need a motion to recommend approval of the local initiatives program guidelines and scoring systems, and we certainly can make recommendation.
I make a recommendation to move the cap to 4. If we were undersubscribed, let's go ahead and start getting some of the small projects that are already funded. Let's get some of the big ones going. I recommend to raise the cap.
Okay, do you also recommend the adoption of the program with the raised cap?
Yes.
To 4 million? Okay.
A question. As part of the discussion, Luke, you said it was at 5 at one point. You had lowered it. Is that correct?
I believe so. I believe it's the first year it's probably 5, but.
I mean, do we want to put constraints at 3.5 and 4? You know, if we had a benchmark at one point where it was 5, you know, just to say, and again, in agreement with what discussion was made, where we want to kind of go after some of the larger projects. I mean. It's just a part of discussion, but I feel that,
yeah.
You know.
At 5, you would fund 3 projects entirely, 3 huge projects entirely.
So I think we kind of want to be able to get those big ones in, but also fund, spread the wealth. So that was, you know.
Well,
I think
people can always apply for much less, $250,000. So
sure.
I think that's always the option. I think I understand wanting to spread it, but also that hugely complicates staff's efforts to also manage all those little tiny projects, you know, maybe needed and certainly doesn't keep them from doing it, but if you don't put the cap up high enough, then it will keep good projects from coming in just because they can't pay them off. So, what do you want the managers to say?
I don't know. What does everybody think? I mean, We're at 4.5, which is three projects.
You love it.
I know, but if three projects is 13.5, and it still leaves $3.5 million for a whole bunch of other projects. If we go to five, which I'm not opposed to, it leaves $2 million for some of the smaller projects. I don't know, what do people feel like? Because I'm telling you what, I know we did a transportation alternative in the Glades, and the paperwork was daunting.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get into it, it is very intense.
Mm-hmm. And the smaller projects, it's a lot to manage. The federal, or the system, with 250,000.
So the thing to remember is that, you know, there's 13 members on the MPO, and then you have to think of all the other agencies who are eligible to apply. There's probably 20, you know, eligible entities to apply. And if three or four of them get all the money in one year, that kind of looks, you know, you're dampening other people's hopes,
but
I guess.
Again,
but
you're allowed to do the minimum, so do four. I would suggest maybe just keep it at four if that's your consumption.
Or even $3.5 million is $1 million more than currently allowed, you know? All right. What is that everybody think?
There's a motion and a second on the floor.
Right, for the $4 million. Let's do backtrack to $4 million.
Okay.
Any other comments? Any other discussion?
I like the idea of bringing it up. 2.5 is too low. I'll support taking it to 4 now. Let's see how it runs for a while, and if we feel like we're still hampering and pushing projects down, we can recommend.
We're just making a recommendation to the MPO.
Correct.
They're going to either agree with the recommendation or have a different recommendation.
Yes,
so
I would support it.
Okay. Should we go to a vote? Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Get that done. Okay, the next item is a motion to recommend approval of the Transportation Alternative Program's guidelines and supporting systems.
Okay, so similar to Luke's presentation, the Transportation Alternatives Program, which are all familiar with for the most part, really focuses on on-road and off-road, non-motorized facilities. So those are typically things like sidewalk projects, bike lanes, complete streets, safe routes to school projects. A few things that I want to highlight about this program are really the changes that we're suggesting. So the first item that I'd like to highlight is applications. The funding cap has changed, similar to what we just discussed for the LI program. Applications are limited to the request of $250,000, and our new maximum funding cap is $1 million. Our previous cap was $750,000. So I think this does make more room for those smaller projects that we were previously talking about. Another change, or some other things that I want to highlight are the schedule, the required documents, and then our ranking system. So I'll just go to our first exhibit. The first exhibit will just show you the online form, and if you have submitted an application previously, then you're familiar with the system. You would input your information. It kind of helps us score on the back end, and we're able to kind of get the basis of information of the scope for your project. Exhibit B is what I'll spend a little bit of time on. So the program officially kicks off December 2nd, which is our MPO board meeting, once they approve the program as laid out. And then December 15th, we'll have our joint application workshop that we mentioned previously. I think Valerie passed out some of the programs for that, and if you didn't get one, it's right outside. That's going to be at 9 a.m. here at the MPO. And so that's a good time for you to come and get some questions answered from FDOT as well. December 19th through February 24th is your time to really consult with us and ask us specific questions about your project. Actually, any time is a good time for you to ask questions about your project. We're starting to receive some of the questions about upcoming projects now. So anytime that you'd like to give us a phone call, we can schedule a date and really go through what you're thinking about for your project. So applications will be due March 3rd. To the MPO. It's an accelerated schedule. Some of you may have noticed that. I believe in our 2015 schedule, we also had an accelerated schedule. So that's why the applications are due a little bit earlier in the year. So March 3rd, the applications are due. MPO staff internally will screen those applications over the next 2 weeks. And then on the 20th, we'll submit our tentative rankings back to FDOT so that they can go ahead and start doing their field reviews and check for kind of some of those field issues for construction. On April 6th, we'll have the presentations to MPL, to the BT PAC. So you guys will have those presentations, and that's on a regularly scheduled meeting. And you may be familiar with how we kind of set aside that day to schedule the presentations and kind of talk things out. On the 26th, we get eligibility determinations received back from FDOT to us, and so they'll let us know if there are any critical flaws to any of the projects. We'll relay that information to the applicants. And if there are any issues, you have May 30th to June 30th to resolve any of those issues. Then we have our final listing or ranking back to FDOT based on those kind of last details being handled. And then we submit our priorities to FDOT on the 18th, again, pending the board's approval. All right, and feel free to stop me if you have any questions at any time. All right, so Exhibit C. So just kind of going over the required documents really quickly. Nothing really has changed on the implementation side. So you have two different ways to implement your programs. You can do it through a LAP agreement where you as the applicant designs the project and you apply for the local funds through the MPO reimbursement. And then the second way is that FDOT designs the program through an LFA, a locally funded agreement, and constructs with MPO reimbursement. Another thing I want to point out, I think we already talked about the ownership documentation. That's something that we're getting a lot of feedback from FDOT about, so we want to make sure that we're being upfront with you guys about making sure that we have our ownership documentation for all of the land that's necessary for the project, and that we have a letter of approval from the agent that owns the land saying, yes, we are aware of this project, yes, you can build X greenway that's going to be 10 feet wide from this extent to Y extent. So those are the three things I wanted to point out on this sheet. And moving to Exhibit D, our scoring sheet.
Can we make this a little bit bigger?
Sorry. Sorry, the font size is a little, looks like ants. So we've tried to clean up the scoring system a little bit. So as you may know, in the last 2 years, we've tried to make it more in line with our long-range transportation plan. So that our goals and objectives are really kind of focusing on what we've already said that we wanted to do as an MPO. So we tried this year also to clean out some things that don't really apply. Last year we had things like maintenance, but TAP doesn't really cover maintenance, so we decided to allocate those points elsewhere. So some of the things that have changed, one, you'll see improved safety in a location identified as a bicycle and or pedestrian crash hotspot corridor by the MPO's PED bike safety plan. As you know, the MPO has endeavored in a bike PED safety plan. It is scheduled to be adopted in February, and so we want to really encourage people to look at those hotspots where pedestrian and bike crashes are happening and make some interventions there, so you'll receive extra points if you're doing so. And then if we can scroll down, I think a lot of the other objectives and scoring mechanisms have really stayed the same. So that was the main thing that I wanted to point out. Again, you'll get most of the things that we're scoring you from are from the long-range transportation plan. And then the proximity benefit is something that we also thought would be helpful.
One of the things we found last year is there was a program submitted to do bicycle safety in schools and mm-hmm. by a bus. The scoring criteria basically scored almost zero. I mean, if there wasn't any criteria for it to get any points, even though our committee ranked it, I think, number one. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything for the educational component in this scoring criteria.
Okay. I think that will be handled in part by the bike pit safety hotspots section, and we can work to reword that so that it can be a little bit more broad and improving safety in education as well as engineering. And I think that might be the place for now where most of that will be housed. There are a few points that someone could gain with having a project in proximity to a school. And then possibly, depending on what population they're serving. So that's up to the group if we want to change some of those things.
The greenways will not score well on the system as well.
We have pathways. They're receiving about 6 points, depending on the, or up to 6 points. But again, that's something that the group can decide to reallocate points from one point to another. That's up to you guys.
Fran, the Safe Routes projects will be eligible under TAP for funding, correct?
Correct.
And infrastructure, non-infrastructure. Okay. I know before the school district, a few years back, was an entity that would be able to apply, the last few times we were able to support. Are we still in that same bracket? Would we be able to apply directly for the funding, or still be able to support the local governments that want to do things with regards to or may have impact to public schools in the county?
Well, if you're doing an infrastructure project, and if it's on, if it does also touch any kind of public lands, then you would have to do a project in conjunction. But from my knowledge, you are still an eligible applicant for the TAP program for Safe Routes. You are an eligible.
Oh, we are an eligible. So we are eligible.
Yes, you are eligible. That's the middle
right, okay. So even if we want to do some non-infrastructure application, we did similarly with the safety fairs, we did the whole bunch with the rights of education. That's.
So I will point a caveat. That's a good point that you brought up. Last year we did also have a Safe Routes to School project, and it asked for a lot of promotional items. FHWA is shunning kind of a lot of the promotional items, which really does take a lot of the teeth out of the non-infrastructure projects.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fund things like teacher training or Safe Routes to School coordinator training, but things like kind of materials are the things that our FHWA is no longer wanting to fund through our TAP program. So, okay, sure. And I think that's it. The last page is the glossary of terms, and that just kind of helps you understand, some of the things that we're referring to. We are requesting a motion on this.
Okay, do we have any comments, any questions with Fran?
One of the things I last year we ranked the projects quite a bit different than NPO staff did. And our priority list was different. Yeah, one of the things I'd like to see is that we are experts in the field that our ranking supersedes NPO staff ranking.
It does at the end of the day. So what happens is, I went over the schedule and, talked about when we submit our rankings to FDOT. And then at the final, so when we submit our rankings to FDOT, they're kind of the NPO ranked projects so that they'll know what our priorities are. But when we submit our final ranking, that reflects BTPAC's point of view. So
our rankings did go in as well.
Yes,
we wanted.
Definitely.
But to the where there
no, we did change the ranking according to what your vote was, but for some specific projects they kind of fell through because of eligibility issues.
Yeah, that's common.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Okay, any other comments? Do we have a motion to approve the Transportation Alternative Program Guidelines and Scoring System?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So now we move on to the item B, bike suit development map on the information items.
So you get to hear a little bit more this morning. So as you may know, the Palm Beach MPO presented or adopted a bike master plan in 2009 with the help of Sprinkle Consultants. That plan showed the bicycle level of service. So we're using that bicycle level of service to create a bike suitability map. And so today I'm kind of unveiling the map. So this is really just a proof from the printer. Oh, you're right. Yeah. So this is a proof from the printer. We are still in the process of creating the final draft of the map, but we wanted to show it to you guys and let you know our progress. And on previous meetings, we've asked you to give us feedback about some of the lines that are on the map and making sure that what we are showing is complete infrastructure is really out there. So that's what's shown on one side. You have the bike suitability, which is graded from caution, fair, good, telling cyclists what they should expect on a roadway. And then it also shows the facility types. We've also included greenways and transit hubs on the map side. And a disclaimer that the data on here is as of November 16th. So if you look at it in November 2016, so if you look at it 2020, hopefully it's out of date.
Okay. So will this, if you go on Google now and hit their little bike things, it'll kind of rate what they feel like that bike. I don't know who gives them that rating, but will this somehow have that ability that we can all get it offline?
We do intend to have this also online available to you.
Would it ever be incorporated into Google?
It's hard for me to say. I'm not sure how that works on Google's end. I think we have been in conversation with Google before about how they collect their data and show their data. So I can't answer that for sure, but I think that's a worthwhile initiative.
I think that's the first thing that people do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like all this great work at this specific level could be incorporated into maybe theirs, because again, I don't know how they assess what town is great and which one has missing facilities. I don't know who does that assessment. So it would be, I mean, I know you can improve their map, you can make recommendations for improvements or for mistakes or whatever. So is that something you guys can look into?
I think that's something that we can look into. I think it might be one of the things to note is that, we know where this data comes from, what the inputs are, and so we have to work with Google to see what their inputs are and how much we can stand behind it. But yeah, definitely, I think that's something that we can look into. Yes. And then I just want to point out quickly that the other side of the map has information for the cyclists, so bicycle safety information, where to ride on the road, advising them not to ride on the sidewalks, especially in the wrong direction, use your helmet, be safe. Parts of a bicycle, the different types of facilities that they can find, resources for more information, and then some important dates to remember, like Florida Bike Month and National Bike to School Day, so that type of information. The MPO is producing 15,000 copies. Yes,
nice.
Of this map. So I ask all of you to be our help in distributing these maps, and I'll happily give you a stack once they are finished and printed and received back to us. And I think it'll be a great way to start off our new year and kind of showing off where we are and then making this kind of aspirational as to where we want to be.
When do you anticipate the printing to be done?
So we're working with the printers now. We really wanted to have it in time for this meeting, but it looks like we might have it in time for TAC next week, but definitely in time for our MPO board meeting in the 12th. So, practically any day now.
Going back to Brenda's question, would you also be sharing the GIS data layer so that we can pull it into our own systems? Because we are in the process of kind of building an online, more web-based applications for things. I think this would be a great tool to have available.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Sure.
Thank you.
On that handout, in the right-hand column, in the box where it says contact information,
mm-hmm.
it says Metropolitan Organization is missing the word planning.
Which handout?
That one, the box.
Okay.
The box to the right.
Okay, thank you for that.
In the middle.
Yes. Okay, thanks.
Any other comments?
Great job, Francesca.
Thank you very much. We go on to item C, which is the public involvement activity report.
I don't believe that report is.
I think that's on this agenda by mistake, probably.
Okay.
So probably we'll strike that from the agenda.
Okay.
No.
Well, what we're starting to do is to come up with a one-pager. Do we have it? Does that one have actual data?
Yes, this is the most accurate one from
October. So we're trying to come up with a one-page overview for our committees and board to give them the depth, to show what's going on during a given month. So occasionally, depending on our scheduling, you may see 2 months of data. You may see the month of October and the month of November, for instance, although we just completed November, so we haven't compiled all that data. But just kind of in a snapshot to see what we're getting as far as activity on our various social media, on our website, what types of special events and activities we have been involved in or have been promoting through those media. Some of the things that we've got, we just did an event yesterday, I guess, actually, for WGI, which was very exciting because it's the private sector. It's the first time I recall a private sector leading an event that we were part of. It was very exciting to see not government taking the lead, but the private sector and a room full of people that really make a difference in the business community coming together. So we did that yesterday. Nick was one of the panelists. We had an exhibit there. They were doing a lot of social media. And actually, I would take this opportunity to encourage you to go on to Facebook. You can go to our Facebook page, actually, where I copied over from there is the video of the panel. It was just a breakfast meeting, so it's not like an all-day thing to watch the video. But it was a really exciting discussion yesterday, a lot of good questions and answers, good panel with the question-answer part, I think, got very lively. And one of Nick's answers actually generated applause from the audience. So really, it was really inspiring people to get involved with their elected officials, let them know how they want projects to move forward. I think they were talking specifically about the Southern Boulevard Corridor at that point in time. So anyway, this is kind of a report part of the kind of things like that we go out to and get involved in and what we're doing online. We also have a Safety is Golden Mobility Fair sponsored by DOT coming up next week, which is going to be held at the Boland Center in Boca Raton. And that is part of Older Driver Awareness Week, which begins up next week, always the first week in December. And so we're going, you'll see the graph at the bottom only has the one bar. We'll always be looking at the previous 12 months. So as we advance this process of an overview, you'll start to see bars. You'll see how things go up and down through the months. And just a way to sort of track that in a snapshot. So. Again, this is the report for the month of October that you're looking at currently. Does anybody have any questions? And as you have a chance to start to look at these, if you have questions or comments or information that you don't understand or you think could be better presented in a very brief form, or even if you just see something in a brief form but you have a more in-depth question about it, please do contact me directly. Melissa Boone. Thank you. Brenda?
I have a quick suggestion that maybe you're bar instead of just showing the year, like you might add a shadow bar that would show the last October, you know, whatever.
Well, the thing is, we are just now starting to collect all this data. So we're just moving forward.
So next year you'll see all that. Okay.
Yeah, you'll always see, like, by the time you get to the end of next year, you'll see the bars for the whole year, and then the, you know, the 13th month would drop off.
Sure.
Like, kind of like our tip and all that. So we'll always see 12 months once we collect it. But right now we're just in the beginning stages of that. Yes,
I see how you're cross-referencing the graph with your impressions and sessions, but how are you referencing in the graph, like the face-to-face pieces, like the WGI event, or
that the one you're looking at there is just media platforms, social media, and website. So the kind of activities where we're actually going out, that's under the highlights part, and then. Down, if you'll scroll down a little bit, it shows upcoming events. So So just kind of a chronological listing of things coming up, both committee meetings, board meetings, and things for the public can get involved, as well as the things where we're going out in the community. But we don't really have an easy way to track, like, you know, if you go to an event, how many people were there? How many did you actually talk to? You know, at some point you can drive yourself crazy. I can't talk to you because I'm too busy, you know, writing down numbers. We could, you know, estimate that, but we're not really trying to get to that level of depth with something like this.
I have a question.
Yes.
I know you're just starting this endeavor, but at some point do you think it would be possible to track, in terms of the online engagement, the top three threads that are being talked about, so that you have sort of not just a sense of how many, but what were the issues that got the most engagement, even by...
I think that's way beyond where we are now. We are still trying to build our audience. We have very small audiences on social media, and every one you can really help personally by liking the pages, following us, and if you see something that we post, please share it if you feel it's appropriate. I know some of us, especially because of my role, I personally try to keep my private Facebook separate from this, and we ask our staff not to answer a question directly. It's great if Francesca says, you know, she likes something, but if you ask a bike ped kind of question, we want that response to be coming from the Palm Beach MPO as an official entity. But there's not, we don't yet have the level of engagement where we have trending topics and that kind of interaction. And, you know, I hear what you're saying, but it's a little difficult. But we are trying to use the hashtags all a lot more for things like public transit day and, you know, things like that that we're involved in when we're part of a bigger movement, or like yesterday when the event we went to, using their hashtags. So other people that are following those hashtags are seeing the posts that we made, in addition to the ones that were made by other attendees and exhibitors and the organizers of the event. And
okay.
Alexa's been a big help. She put together this form, and she's going to help with the collection of a lot of the data, and she's also assisting with doing some more social media posting. So hopefully we'll get more of that out there. And for those of you that participated in the photo contest earlier, thank you very much. But we always are accepting. We're not always having a contest, but we always are looking for good content, and especially like on the weekends. If we want to schedule a pretty picture of something that's loosely related to transportation, you know, as long as we're not, you know, seeing visible people that can be identified or invading anybody's privacy, but, you know, please keep that in mind. So if you have a good picture at some point or a quick video of something, you know, related to transportation, it can be the more relaxing parts of transportation. It can be, you know, the water taxis or boating, you know, something that people really like to look at. You know, we can always make use of those kinds of pictures, so please always continue to send short videos and photos to us with permission to use them for that type of purpose.
Okay.
Thank
well, thank you very much, and we can keep an eye on that. I know also in the backup we were provided with the summary points from the October MPO board meeting. One of the things I noticed is we have some new members on this committee that were appointed in the October meeting. I want to welcome you to the committee. And I'd also like to thank staff today for all of their presentations and such. And we always do a fine job, and that's continuing. The next meeting, I guess we have members' comments. If anyone has anything they'd like to share, not hearing anything, we'll
Michael,
move on.
Excuse me, I was negligent. I knew that Jennifer looked familiar. Jennifer here is actually with WGI, so I'm giving you a good commercial today,
yeah,
but it was
really
a wonderful event. I do want to recognize that we have had some activity and participation, the Complete Streets Committee, and also coming to some of these lately from some of the WGI folks, and they have a very long walk from next door. So.
Yes,
they
do.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks to WGI, too, for their involvement. We all appreciate that.
I have a few comments. I'd like to thank Margarita Cortez and Nick Urin for our snacks today. I think they were very nice at the end of the year. And I also want to, hold on a second, that was passing my thought. I'll, thank Luke for his presentation as well. I want to say, Michael, I think you did a great job today as our our chair for the day.
Happy
and help. I'm looking forward to working with Heather and Jean.
Okay. Okay, next meeting, we don't have a meeting in January. The next meeting is February 2nd. So happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas.
Sorry, I have another announcement. I neglect to announce that Luke Lambert, who we all cherish, and it's been a great help at the Palm Beach NPO, and it will be leaving. His last day is December 9th. So if you see Luke in the hall, give him a high five or a hug. And he'll be moving to Martin County, so I think that's going to be a shorter trip for him.
Congratulations to Luke. Motion to adjourn. Heather, this will be your problem from now on.
Oh, yay. Okay.